if there's one area where just from sharing the gospel is the biggest barrier, other than a total denial of truth as regards to religion, I suppose, but it would be that most people don't have a sense of sin. In a country where you can leave your wallet laying on the street and somebody will almost always turn it in without taking a dime, it's hard for people in Japan to wrap their minds around the idea that they're sinners. He's created a society where people are overall, at least within most people's mindsets, good. And it's hard for them to see their own sin.
Well, greetings and welcome to the Missions Podcast, the show that explores your hard questions on missions, theology, and practice to help goers think and thinkers go. I'm Alex Kochman, Director of Communications and Engagement for ABWE. I'm excited to take you on another winding journey through the valleys and byways of missiology. I am unfortunately, again, not joined by my partner in crime, Scott Dunford. He is at a church meeting right now. He's busy doing, you know, real ministry, which is what we know many of you are doing as well. And the good news is if you leave a positive rating and review for this show, other people will not only discover the content and listen to it and be blessed and benefited, but then they'll take more steps in ministry. This is a thing that happens. We would encourage you. Help us out with that. I was just looking at our reviews today in Apple Podcasts. We love you guys, but there's less than 300 reviews. This show has been going for a decade almost at this point, and we need a few more reviews. So go ahead and drop those in there. But we're so grateful for all of you, as well as for our guest joining us today, Bill Petit with ABWE's ministry in Japan. And I want to allow you, brother, to give us more of a fuller introduction than I can give. Of course, I had the great privilege of interviewing Bill back in the summer, and that recording was lost. That was supposed to be a part of our Cloud of Witnesses podcast. If you haven't listened to Cloud of Witnesses, but you love hearing stories of people who've served faithfully with ABWE for decades, doing hard things in anonymity, walking through ordinary circumstances of life, God growing their faith along the way, if that encourages you and enriches you as much as it does me, look up Cloud of Witnesses or look in your podcast player of choice. Go to cloudofwitnessespodcast.com. That's another excellent show from ABWE here. And I don't just say that because I'm biased and I'm a part of helping bring that into reality. But Bill, it's good to interview you again, and hoping and praying that the recording file doesn't get corrupted this time around. We just sent Brian, our producer of this show, he was just in Japan. Paul Davis, our president, just got back from Japan over the weekend. You know, there's a lot of interest in the missions world on Japan right now. It's one of our top fields as far as new missionaries going to serve there. Reaching and Teaching has a massive initiative and a documentary behind praying for Japan, praying for the people of Tokyo. Of course, it's the world's second largest unreached people group. There's all of this organic groundswell of interest around Japan. But Bill, I would love if you would not only introduce yourself, but then also share, you know, what's Japan really like behind all of the veneer, behind the beautiful tourist sights and sounds and scenery, behind the animation and the culture and all the sorts of things that we as Westerners tend to associate with that culture. Introduce yourself and tell us about the real Japan.
I was born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio, went to Japan with my wife in 1990 and have been there since 1990, 35 years. My wife and I are church planting generalists, so we have started churches that are now under national leadership and done everything you can imagine that anybody could do at a church, including Bible school teaching, work with the deaf, lots of music ministries and children's teen and every sort of work you can imagine. We have two children. They're both married to Japanese and they're both serving in Japan now. Our son is the pastor of a Japanese church way up north, and our son-in-law is one of the church leaders who preaches at our first church plant. Japan. Yeah, you're right. It was fantastically underrepresented in missions for most of our career there. When we went to Japan, there were quite a few missionaries. And since that time, over the last about 30 years, the number of missionaries dropped. Language schools for the Japanese missionaries closed down. And then all of a sudden, the last, I don't know, 5 years, somebody could give me, probably do better than I on how recently it's been. Suddenly now it is very popular, not just with ABWE, but other mission organizations as well. People are flooding to Japan, especially the bigger cities in Japan. And I'm not sure if it's the weekend. I'm sure that has a little bit to do with it. It's much easier to come visit the flood of anime and manga in America, which is certainly a big influence. Or just that Japan is a beautiful, nice, clean, unevangelized country that needs the gospel. But as a person who's prayed for the harvest is plentiful and labors are few for people to come to Japan for many years, I'm thankful for the people who are coming. And may their tribe increase.
So speaking of tribes increasing, you know, this is maybe a little bit of a different question, but I've got this nagging question about Japan that I haven't been able to fit it into the right mental category. So help me with this. You know, I would say that culture is worldview, is religion externalized, ultimately. You see that around the world. Sure. And generally speaking, you see poverty, disease, difficulty, war, division, injustice in places where Christ is not known, Christ is not preached, where pagan or demonic worldviews hold power. And in general, in the parts of the world where the light of Christ has shone, not perfectly, but in general, there seems to be more common graces in societies, more justice, because biblical principles have filtered, trickled into the society and its underpinnings for hundreds of years. We see that throughout the world. But then you look at Japan, it looks like a very efficient, high-functioning, high-trust, high-social cohesion type of place. You don't really see a lot of, you know, maybe there is, and we're just not aware, but you don't see a lot of, you know, a violent underclass or anything like that. You really do see, not that it's totally pristine, but a lot of it looks really good, and it's surprising on the world scene, given the fact that the light of Christ in general has just not shone in Japan. Why is that? Why is there such common grace in this land where you look at other parts of the world where false worldviews reign and the fruit of that is actually much worse? Can you help us wrap our minds around that?
I don't have an answer for that. All I do know is that you're right. Japanese people overall are, at least within their mindset, good. And if you're coming from a missionary from outside, you realize that overall they're good. If there's one area where just from sharing the gospel is the biggest barrier, other than a total denial of truth as regards to religion, I suppose, but it would be that most people don't have a sense of sin. I just talked to the pastor of our second church plant last night, and he was telling me about two people that he had just had Bible studies with. And I know both these people, and they've been coming to church for quite a long time. They love the church. They love the message. They love everything. They just don't see why they're sinners. And in a country where you can leave your wallet laying on the street and somebody will almost always turn it in without taking a dime, where a convenience store robbery becomes national news, where, you know, is very safe, very comparably very clean. People grieve over that people are stealing bikes a little more than they used to be, bicycles. It's hard for people in Japan to wrap their minds around the idea that they're sinners. As a Christian, I believe in, of course, you know, I joke that I believe, finally I'm starting to believe in Satan, but, you know, I've always believed in Satan, but I believe in him far more now. And I'll give you the Japanese and evil side as part of it. He's created a society where people are overall, at least within most people's mindsets, good. And it's hard for them to see their own sin. And he's created a religious situation that our most common religious group in our part of Japan is Jodo Shinshu, and they believe that you're saved by grace through faith, and that's not of itself. It's a gift of Amida Buddha. So you have a whole bunch of Satan's work in Japan to create a society that can be very easily receptive, resistant to the gospel. And as a result, it's clearly hard to reach. It's easy to make friends, hard to make disciples. We've seen dozens and dozens of people be saved and baptized over the years, but nothing like the results we'd like to see. And there's no doubt that the overall goodness, morality of the Japanese is a great barrier to the gospel.
Well, that kind of leads to the next question. Tell us a little bit about the religious landscape of Japan, because I think depending on your perspective and maybe the impressions that many of us would have in the West, You know, on the one hand, you have spiritualism and you have Shinto, but then you also have secularism and modernity, which really kind of fills the void for any need for anything spiritually. So what really is the ruling worldview paradigm for the average Japanese person? Are you helping them to see that there is a spiritual realm, or are you actively, as the story goes that we shared in Message Magazine, actually with this issue of our magazine here at ABWE that's right now being mailed to our donors and supporters, you're dealing with a case of exorcism. Like, you're actually dealing with sort of hot war, spiritual conflict wise, you know, actual hot conflict in the spiritual battle that we're all in. Is it a mix of both? What does that look like religiously as far as the landscape?
Obviously, what you said, a mix of both is big. I would say from a religious point of view, and this is more true in America, so this is not just like only Japan. All over the world, this is true. People believe that religion is your opinion influenced by your background and culture. So Every background, every culture has its own opinions, and it's perfectly fine to have them. And yours is just as good as anybody else's. Everybody, it's like noses. Everybody has one, and there's nothing wrong with anybody's particularly. And the religion is only an opinion influenced by your background and culture. And as long as you accept it as that, then you make no waves whatsoever. If you at any point said there's a possibility of truth, that thing to say is so bizarre and so crazy that people just can't believe that you're even trying to say it. I had one lady who finally made a profession of faith and followed the Lord in baptism after, at least 7 years. Nobody more than me could be saying in their sermons more that Jesus actually in history died and actually in history rose again. And after about 7 years of coming to church faithfully, she was sitting at the kitchen table with us one day, and she said, "So you mean that Jesus really lived?" And I said, "Yes." "And you mean that he really actually died in history for our sin?" "Yes." "And you mean he really rose again?" "Yes." She believed fairly quickly after that, but even the concept that anybody could mean that something you're saying here about religion, you're trying to say that it had some actual truth in it, is so bizarre to most people that they can't believe you even really mean it. Mm. And there's that. And then, of course, there's secular materialism and all the modernity, which all the things that you said is true, and they're mixed together very well. So as a result, if you take a poll of who's what religion in Japan, the number of people would say they're Shintoist, Buddhist, and Christians, you get a number larger than the population of the United States, the population of Japan. And the main reason for that is because it's not unusual for somebody to think that they could do several at the same time. Mm-hmm. So almost most people, when they're born, have a Shinto blessing. They take part in a Christian wedding. And when they die, they had a Buddhist funeral. And that makes total sense to them, doesn't bother them even a bit, because all are perfectly acceptable points of view, because none of them have any ties to truth whatsoever. They're just opinions anyway.
Define Christian wedding, explicitly with a pastor?
Well, a fake pastor usually. I've been asked to do weddings at these places too. Every large hotel has a fake Christian chapel, and they usually have a cross on them. And they get a fake Christian pastor, and then he does a fake wedding. It has no legal standing. You have a separate legal thing that you just sign up for, your wedding at your city office. But people like to have the wedding. So the ladies like the white dresses and the whole thing. And all this started in the late 1800s, and they have fake Christian weddings. Just about everybody, almost without exception.
I'm just struggling to grasp how that even became a trend, given that there was never a governing Christian worldview, you know, influence over Japanese society.
American movies, American TV shows, they love this stuff. I remember years ago, I had about 25 people in a English class, and I asked them what they thought happened to them when they died. And almost all of them said they go to heaven. And I said, you know, you all say you're Buddhist. Why would you say you go to heaven? Buddhism really doesn't have a sense of heaven as much. Where do you get the heaven idea? And every single one of them, American movies. Their American culture is spread through movies and TV, and they really like the wedding thing. It's got the white dress and walking down the aisle, making the vows and kissing the bride, and all that is cool. They never had that in anything in Japanese, so everybody wants to do it.
So are those, I'm just curious now, like, are those legitimate preparatory means for the gospel. Like, okay, now you embrace that there's a heaven. Let me tell you about the way to get there. Or you understand what marriage is supposed to be. Let me tell you about how to be, you know, a part of this pure and spotless bride being presented to, Christ as the groom. Are those concepts that are actually workable from a foundational, you know, contextualizing, let's build on your understanding kind of approach? Or is it noise in the whole communication process?
I'm sure, without being able to speak for every missionary that's ever been in Japan, yeah, I'm sure we've all used all these things to share the gospel. Mm. And, I believe very much in the power of one. Mm. One person gets saved from something here and there. And if I knew the secret, God saves, I save nobody, God yeah. saves, and God has saved people off of little things from side to side in little corners of everything we've done over the years. But if I could come up with something that was a great, I used to get people call me, what's your secret? And I less and less have a secret. I just want to be in every place I can, share the gospel, and Lord will save people. But man, yes, of course. But that it has convinced anybody that particular approach, I can't say that at all.
It is interesting to think about the providence of God, just the amount of cultural exchange between the U.S. and Japan, as different as we are. You know, we all watch each other's movies, and maybe somewhere in God's plan that does play a role at some level. But, you know, you're drawing out a theme that's critically important, which is just how difficult this hard, rocky spiritual soil is. I know, 35 years, you've walked through all sorts of different circumstances. When we spoke back in the summer, you shared about a very dark time. I know you've had high highs and low lows. Not that we're asking you to dump everything on our listeners, but I think a powerful part of your story is just knowing how the Lord sustained you through really dark times and dark thoughts in your own head. And would you share with our audience just what that's looked like? Just encourage our faith with that story, if you would, brother.
Yeah, I should say that, yes, I've had good times too, of course. We've had multiple ordinations, many people saved, dozens and dozens baptized, churches, new Japanese pastors. The Lord has been greatly blessing to me, but I've had difficult times too. And, they often talk about Japan as the graveyard of missionaries. We've had over the dozens and dozens and dozens of ABW missionaries in Japan since they first went in the mid-50s, only two who have retired from Japan. Mm. Suhan and Becky's dad, Paul Shook. And it makes it a hard field. And often people fall away. It's difficult. I've had times when I've been in deep depression. I've wanted to quit more than once. I've looked on the internet for a place to go in America more than once. Thought of how much easier it would be to be a pastor in Japan more than once. I've been so low that I used to curl up in the closet in a blanket and just lay there. And I can remember that very, very low, many, many times I wanted to kill myself. I still remember driving past a wood chipper. And the most joyous thought I could have is just throwing myself in the wood chipper. I just wanted to do that desperately. And so I have had difficult times, and it would be a lie to say that I haven't. But man, I've had some of the biggest blessings of any missionary you've ever met. We built our first church building at the end of our first term, starting the church from prep. I mean, that's a miracle in itself. And oh man, just my dearest friends on earth are Japanese. And if I hadn't just not given up during those times, I wouldn't have seen some of the great blessings that I've seen over these years. And, my kids probably wouldn't be there serving the Lord, and my grandkids too. And, it's been really tough. I've wanted to quit. I'm glad I didn't. The Lord's been gracious through the years, given me good Japanese friends, the world's greatest wife, and, a lot of encouragement along the way.
And it's a good reminder that it's not worth it because on the other side of your suffering, you came out of that and witnessed explosive numeric growth in your ministry. It's worth it because the Lord is good. And you've certainly preached and modeled that, brother. You mentioned building the church. I think there's some unique stories there of how God even brought about the building, or at least one of these church buildings, in some unique providential ways. Tell us about that.
Okay, we've had three big building programs and a lot of other little things. But the first building program we had was in 1996. And Dave Purrington came from ABW to help us out, those of note, Dave. And we had 38 volunteers from the States and people from the church, and everybody gave sacrificially. We brought all the building materials from America. And near the end, we had a Japanese carpenter who was not a Christian who helped us out with it and said, we're going to have the occupancy permit meeting on Friday. If you pass, you'll be able to use the building. And I said, great, are we okay? And he said, well, there's one thing you don't know, and that is that if you bring building materials from the United States, you have to have them sent to a separate site, re-stamped and grade marked, and then you can use them. Otherwise, they're not allowed to be used. And I had called other missionaries. I had talked to other carpenters. They all said, you will have no trouble using these building materials. There are no religious, no problems whatsoever. Just do it. And this at this time, the yen was strong. Dollar was weak. The building materials from the States were cheaper. And I looked at the carpenter and I said, well, I can't, you know, what am I going to do? This building materials were not sent to the separate site. We're not re-inspected. We're not re-grade stamped. He says, that's no problem. You go to a local hardware store, you buy a piece of wood, you lean against the wall. When the inspectors come and they say, did you get all your wood re-inspected? You say, just like that piece of wood, lean against the wall. And they say, yeah, that's fine. And you can use your building. And I looked at the carpenter and I said, I can't do that. That'd be a lie. And he said, baka yaro, baka baka, which means you're a stupid fool. You're an idiot. And I said, but I still can't do it. And he says, then you're not going to be able to use your church. You might as well just tear it down. They will say you can't use the church because it has to have that that approval. And I said, I just can't do it. I was young. I thought I'd destroy the Lord's work in Japan. I thought that the people in the church would fall around. What?
Single-handedly.
I must have thought very highly of myself, huh? And I thought that people church would fall away. I thought all my supporting churches would drop us. And I sort of pictured myself somewhere in California selling hot dogs on the beach, primarily because I didn't know anybody in Southern California at that time. And I just went to work every day, fixing the last little things at the church. And on Wednesday, I got the Japanese newspaper. And Nikki Cantor, who was the trade representative for the United States, had been there talking to the prime minister about trade and tariffs. They don't do that anymore, but they did then. And I'm just kidding. Of course, that's still in the news, isn't it? They said, well, you're importing our Toyotas and Sonys. Why can't you take more of our wood? And one of the big trade barriers was the reinspection. By the time you did that, it cost more than buying it anyway. And I picked up the newspaper, and the headline was that from that day forward, you could use American building materials just as they were without having them re-inspected. I picked it up, and I showed it to my wife. I hadn't even prayed about it because I thought I'd just blown it so bad, couldn't be fixed. She wasn't impressed, took it to the carpenter, just nodded his head. And we had the inspection that Friday. It's still being used with that sermon there last Sunday and people being saved and baptized still that church building to this day. So it's the Lord who protects his church. It's the Lord who saves. It's the Lord who provides leadership. And it's not me, and it's never been me or any missionary. And that's your hope as missionaries in Japan.
Amen. And also just a testimony to the providence of God, not only over conversion and the exercise of the means of grace in ministry, but also things like trade negotiations and government regulations and his sovereignty and his fingerprints all over those things. An important reminder. What's your counsel to American churches? You're home on furlough right now. When people think about Japan, are you calling for more Americans to go and serve as missionaries? Are you calling for more to pray or to support? Are you, you know, there's a lot of enthusiasm about Japan. Are you tempering that? Are you fanning that flame? What fundamentally is it when you speak to believers in the U.S. here that you're seeking to encourage them about, or what is it that they need to know? What is it that they need to do?
Well, of course, by all means, pray. I'm thankful to those who've given sacrificially to us over the years, so I can't say anything against that. Our big needs in Japan, of course, go. I mean, the Bible says go, go. But our big need in Japan is just that we have a elderly population. At the moment, the last poll I heard was that 0.7% of the Japanese said they are Christian, but your evangelical group was far smaller. What's much smaller than that is anybody who's pastors. Our son's church hadn't had a pastor for 17 years before he went there. the Christmas Sunday before he got there. There were eight, which is your big day, Christmas. And the average age of pastors, it's hard to nail this down because it's so small, but is easily over 70. So what Japan really needs is new young men to make the commitment to be leaders in the church. And it's not an easy commitment. They're not going to be rich. They're not going to be respected. They're not going to be particularly by anybody else's point of view successful. But without that new group of especially Japanese young men to be leaders in the church, boy, it's hard to see much of a growth of future for the Japan. That's the first biggest prayer request. And then, of course, people to go and witness and give a lifetime. Don't give 2 years. Don't give 4 years. Your Japanese growth will take years to where you're capable to do, listen and understand and do the things you need to do. Go and plan and stay there and die there. And work on your Japanese till you're just about want to throw up. It's worth it. Do it. It's needed. That would be my and church planning. I am a church planner to the core. I believe the church is God's plan for discipleship, for evangelism, for everything. Man, make the church big.
You know, in close, I was meeting with some other missionaries recently, and every conversation I have, both within ABWE and then just in the missions world in general, I'm hearing from them what I'm hearing from you. I'm hearing it across the board from everyone ad nauseum that they want more qualified, capable, elder qualified men to lead in churches, to pastor or to lead church plants. You know, we have many single ladies serving in lots of important ministries across the world. That's important, casting no aspersions at all. But if we believe that the local church is, just like you said, God's plan A to reach the nations, well, churches need pastors. They need elders. They need officers, those who can serve and preach and teach and shepherd and lead and rule well. And ultimately, for that to be the launching base by which the Great Commission is going to happen. It's not just going to happen through rugged individuals walking around with their backpack full of tracts, as wonderful as that is. It's going to happen through the whole community of the local church multiplied out and the collective witness of all of those lives striving together for the gospel side by side, Philippians 1:27. So, Bill, how can people get a hold of you and how can they learn more about the work in Japan? Of course, they can go to ABWE's website. They can also go to open.abwe.org and learn more about our open initiative that's focusing on growing our Tokyo team in particular. But how can they get a hold of you and where else would you point them?
For me, obviously through ABWE, they could find our email address anytime. It is bbpetite@gmail.com. And anybody wants to write me, I will get it back to them as quickly as possible. Use them pretty much that same day. And I especially want to encourage anybody who wants to go or is interested in praying for Japan. We love the country. We love the people. It is a wonderful place to live and worship and be a missionary. But it sometimes can be discouraging, no doubt. And as you're right too. Single ladies, we have been greatly blessed by working with single ladies our whole career in Japan and greatly thankful for them.
You can get a hold of us, alex@missionspodcast.com. We'd love to hear from you. Join us for our overtime segment that we're about to record. Talk about anything we didn't get to on the main episode at missionspodcast.com/premium or in the subscription tab on your Apple Podcasts app. You can take your next steps in the Great Commission yourself at abwe.org. And until our next episode, go and make disciples of all the nations. Hey everyone, did you know that this is not the only show from ABWE? Cloud of Witnesses is a podcast telling the story of faithful missionaries who've served with ABWE through the years and the stories of how God used their lives among the nations for His glory and for their good. We want to show you a preview from this episode of the final season of Cloud of Witnesses, Cloud of Witnesses Season 3, which is currently available in your podcast platform of choice. You can look that up now, but take a listen to this preview.
To me, you never know. We think, well, I can't talk to that person, or, you know, I could never get to that person. But when God is working in somebody's heart, He uses us to be the instruments in taking the gospel to them. And it might be the most unsuspecting person you think you could never reach for Him. To me, it's a blessing.
Well, you can hear the conclusion to that story and more by, again, looking up Cloud of Witnesses in your favorite podcast player, or go to abwe.org or cloudofwitnessespodcast.com. Go there and hear these powerful stories of faithful missionary goers who've gone before.